welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 11th, 2013, and this is episode 37 of our exciting show. My name is Rob. With me, a little different thing here today. I have Jason with me today. Hey, Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Rob.
It's nice to have you. Replacing that deadbeat son of a gun who we're all better off without.
Yeah, also named Jason. Interesting.
Yeah, strange. Yeah. Weird coincidence there.
Yeah.
Karmic alignment. I don't know what you would call that.
I have a twin brother. His name is Jason.
Huh.
He's actually my other brother, Daryl, but...
How's it going?
Why are you so mean? I'm good.
Yeah, it's fun to be mean.
So, hey, what have we been up to, Rob?
We went to a party.
We owned that party.
We rocked that party.
So we went to our friend's 40th birthday party.
Happy birthday, Ro.
Yeah, yeah. And so at this party, they had karaoke, which I helped set up. But my plan was to not sing any karaoke. Cause I just want to say, like, I'm not a huge fan of singing karaoke in front of large groups of people. And there was a good number of people at that party.
And you ended up singing all of the karaoke.
Not all
of it. You ended up singing all of the good karaoke.
Yes. And why was that? Because of you. So Rob and I sang several songs together on karaoke. Uh-huh. Our low point, I think, was Bohemian Rhapsody.
It was the first one. Well, we were still getting into it.
And that was a jacked up version.
It was terrible.
Song.
Like half the lyrics weren't even in the thing.
Yeah.
So we would just kind of have to sing it from memory.
And that was not good.
Well, we weren't prepared for that.
We were unprepared.
Right.
We also did Fight for It to Party.
And we brought the house down.
Yeah. Oh, we killed it. People were screaming.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. This was that magic moment from the movie. Like if this was like a movie about our lives,
yeah.
Like about two podcasters and like our biography.
Who went and sang karaoke one night at a small party.
We got to the part in Fight for Your Right. And if you're a Beastie Boys fan, you know this, where it says, "All mommy just jealous. It's the Beastie Boys."
Yeah.
But then it's Beastie Boys because, you know, three different guys are saying it.
Right.
And you said B, I said Stee, and the crowd yelled boys.
That was great.
I mean, like, that was a win right there.
Right there. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
What else did we sing?
We sang one more, didn't we? Yeah. I sang Folsom Prison with Will. And he didn't know that song. He'd never heard it before. So I did very well. He did very poorly.
I did that together to someone else, too.
Yeah.
We gave them a song they'd never heard of.
I got Friends in Low Places. Yeah,
which was too bad, because who hasn't heard that song? Especially who hasn't heard that song
they were
for
young.
Karaoke.
They were young.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were too young for that. I mean, I'm not a big Garth Brooks fan, but that's a pretty good song.
You know what? It is. You know what? I sang a song with my wife.
That's what it was, yeah.
What was it?
I don't know.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I don't know.
It was fun, though.
Yeah, and Rowan Will sang Endless Love, and everyone slow danced.
They did.
And it was beautiful.
Were you there when the dude dressed as Run DMC? Oh, yeah. By the way, it was an 80s party.
An 80s party.
There was a guy dressed as Run DMC who sang Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond.
Sweet Caroline.
And it was great.
It was phenomenal.
He won. He was the winner that night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And his Run DMC costume was awesome.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
His little kid was dressed up as DMC. I don't know if he was Run or
them.
DMC, but
yeah,
he was the other one. So,
yeah.
Anyways, this was a lot of talking here. Hey, what have you been playing, Rob?
Well, not a whole lot, to be honest with you. I started playing Darksiders, which is a video game. It's basically Legend of Zelda, but like with like demons and monsters and
interesting
and blood and guts and stuff. It's pretty fun. I'm terrible at it, but it's pretty fun. It's an old game though. It was just something I got free from PlayStation Network service. But I thought I might mention a game that I was just reminded of recently called The Princess Bride Storming the Castle.
Hey,
it's a licensed game, if you hadn't picked that up already. I don't generally buy these, but I bought this as a gift for my wife shortly after we started dating, because, you know, who doesn't love Princess Bride? I did a whole thing of it for Christmas. I gave her an action figure of the Dread Pirate Roberts, and I got the Princess Bride game, and it was fun. And I think we've only played it twice, because it's not that great. And maybe I shouldn't even talk about it, because it's been so long since I played that I don't remember the details. But, okay.
Why were you reminded of it, though, Rob?
Why was I reminded of it? Well, why don't you tell that story?
So, Rob was reminded of it because I had let him know, and we saw via Twitter, that Game Salute has bought the license for future board, card, and dice and role-playing games of The Princess Bride. So And it sounds like they're really going to do it justice. I mean, if we were going to trust someone to do that, I would say Game Salute is an awesome choice. And it sounds like the way they're setting it up is like one big board game with several mini games. They're going to like Mario Party 8 it, you know, as I like to say. And these little mini games are going to combine. Like, each mini game will be a scene in the movie. So, like, the Battle of Wits, or the Fire Swamp, or getting through the gate, or storming the castle, or all of that stuff.
Yeah, and that sounds cool. So, I thought about this game because that reminded me of it, right?
Right.
And I wanted to talk about maybe some of the lessons that they might be able to learn looking back at this game.
Awesome.
Okay, so the basic idea of the game is that the players are characters from the movie who are racing to be the first one to the castle to save Buttercup from getting married. And your options of characters that you can be. You can obviously be Wesley, the Dread Pirate Roberts. You can be Inigo. Is it Inigo or Inigo? I never
Inigo. Know.
Inigo, whatever. You can be Fezzik. You know, you can be Andre the Giant. Or you can be Buttercup, racing into the castle to save
Buttercup. That's awesome.
Sure.
Hey, the girl could save herself.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know why she'd be racing into the castle. It seems like she'd be running the opposite direction.
Yeah. And you have these cardboard punch-out chipboard.
That's like really thick
chipboard. It's really thick chipboard. These stand-up things with pictures on them. Inigo's has a picture on one side and is printed wrong on the back. So his picture is actually only on one side. So the production quality is not great.
Just from the outside of the box, the production quality does not look good.
It's pretty chintzy. You have a big square card that you place in the middle of the table. Everybody gets some cards that represent different locations. Like, we have the ravine floor, the pit of despair, the fire swamp, the thieves forest. What else? The cliff top. The Cliffs of Insanity, the Floor and Sea. Okay, so you've got all these different, Miracle Maxes, these different locations, and you're trying to lay these locations down up in a line to move from point A to point B to be the first one to get to the castle. And in order to move from one location onto another one, you have to have another kind of card, these item cards, and these item cards are like ropes, or the machine, or taking inventory. Some of them, I guess, I'm sorry, some of them are equipment, some of them are actions. So, anyway, and you'll need certain kinds of equipment in order to move on or off of certain location cards. You can use different action cards to move your cards around, move your piece around, to move your opponent's pieces around. A lot of take that in there. But it's all just kind of very clunky and awkward.
Okay.
And then... it's not as simple as read the text on the card, because there's a lot of conditional things. You know, let me pull one of the items here. Is the well? There's not just rope. There's also the climbing rope.
There's a difference.
Yeah, the climbing rope
is longer.
The rope used to enter the Cliffs of Insanity. Used to enter the Fire Swamp if there's a ravine floor or a floor and sea between your token and the Fire Swamp. Wait, what? Climbing rope used to enter the Cliffs of Insanity, used to enter the cliff top. So it's weird overlapping things that work and don't work. There's the dagger. This dagger card has more text on it than I've ever seen on any card. Used to enter cliff top. If used to enter cliff top, this card is not discarded and returned to your hand. Used to leave cliff top and advance two path tiles, ignoring entry requirements of path tile being entered. If used to leave cliff top, this card is discarded. And then back in the rule book, there's a page and a half of other conditional things. For the dagger that wouldn't fit on the card. It's dumb.
None of those are... Inigo is stabbed with the dagger, because that's like the only thing that happens with the dagger. Right.
There's a picture of what's his name cutting a rope, the inconceivable guy.
Oh yeah, he does try to cut the rope.
Yeah, so all the cards. I mean, they have big stills from the movie on them, and I mean they're nicely printed. It's a good quality print, and they're nice heavy cards and everything. But it's just it feels kind of slapped together and like a cheap cash in, you know.
Yeah,
I didn't care for it at all.
Well, and that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of licensed games.
Most licensed games, I would say probably 80 to 90% of them, and I'm just making that number up, but based on other people I know that have played licensed games, basically, so Battlestar Galactica is good.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Right.
And if you like Monopoly, the licensed Monopolies are usually pretty good.
Right.
But that's why I'm so excited about Game Salute getting this license, because Game Salute, I think, is going to do it right.
I hope so. I hope so.
I really think they will. They do a lot of good stuff. You know, they work with a lot of good people. And you know, they're trying to accept open, you know, designers to, you know, to come in and pitch their idea. And I think that's just great.
That's super cool, yeah.
Why not open it to the community, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
So...
We wish them luck with that, of course.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But my last thought on this subject is...
Yeah.
Mowage.
Yeah.
Wav. Wav. Oh, that movie is just so great.
It's great. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Like, I haven't watched it in months. It's good, though. Yeah, what have you been playing?
I recently got to play a game I've played several times, and I've talked about it on the show before, but I'll just give it a quick mention.
Yep.
That game is Forbidden Island.
What? I've never heard of such a thing.
So, Forbidden Island is one of my favorite games from last year that I discovered back in 2012. I found it at Barnes & Noble, picked it up, gave it a try, and was just... I was just all over it. It was super good. Basically, the premise is it's a cooperative game, which is cool because that's different. It features variable player powers, each person having a different ability depending on which role you're dealt at the beginning of the game. And the goal is to get to this island. And on this island, you have to get four idols, like Indiana Jones-style idols. The problem is the island is sinking, which is a problem because it's sinking and you're on it.
Yeah.
So you have to get those things and then get to the helipad and fly away. And you have to save everyone or you lose. So it's really fun. And what I really like about the game is that as you go through the game, you have to draw these water tiles that are telling you what parts of the island are sinking because it's a modular board.
Yeah.
And that's cool too because the board is always different when you play it.
Sure.
But the board, as it's sinking, you have this thing called the water level. And that tells you how many cards you have to draw for how many places are sinking that turn. Now, every once in a while in the water level deck, you run into a water's rise card. And that means that the water is going up, which means you have to draw more water cards.
Mm-hmm.
So as the game progresses, the game gets more dire and more fast-paced. The threat level rises.
Sure.
You know, that's something that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought we could talk about that for the mechanic this week.
Okay, yeah.
The idea of I kind of struggle with what they call this. You know, one thing might be a different way I've seen it used in games is a time track. So the idea, there's two things I'm thinking of here. One is that throughout the game, things get increasingly difficult, right?
Yeah.
You know, because they want the danger level to rise. But I'm reminded of a video game I play as well, where the danger level doesn't necessarily rise, but as your turn progresses, different things become available to you and different threats arise. That game is Puzzlecraft. It's an iPhone game. I've talked about it before. It's a harvesting game.
Okay.
And throughout your turn, you get so many times you can move per turn. And every time you make a move, it moves the time track a little bit. And you eventually go through all four seasons. Well, in the first season, you're just harvesting. It's mostly wheat and that kind of stuff. But then as you get into the next season, then the rats start to show up and you get into fall. And so you have to get rid of the rats before they eat your fruit that you need to harvest.
I hate when the rats eat my fruit.
Oh, I hate it so much.
It's the worst.
And then you get to winter, right? And I think I'm doing this wrong. Winter is the last, but like as you get to there, then the wolves come out and they'll eat your livestock if you don't. If
jerks.
You don't get rid of them.
Jerks.
So the idea that it progresses throughout, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Forbidden Island, obviously, I think is the best. Off the top of my head is the best thing I can think of for that because it's very organic how it happens. And what's cool is you never know when that's going to happen. You can get two in a you can get two in a row. You do reshuffle every time.
Mm-hmm.
So as to make it, you know, you don't know what's happening next, but
yeah. So it's like this kind of increasing pressure, this increasing tension idea.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like an action movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's a cool mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it forces you, you know, so here's in a cooperative game. I think this is what this mimics, and I could be wrong, but when you think of a normal 4-player game or a 2-player game, when you're playing against those other people, as the game moves on, right, and you're getting close to the end, and somebody might win, pressure builds, right?
Yeah.
Oh crap, Rob's gonna win. What can I do to stop him? And that kind of thing. I know that games like Citadels that I've played a ton. That happens. Like, as you start to get closer, like, that person becomes a target, and you stop them from winning. Don't let them win, you know? Whereas a game where you're cooperative, you have to have a way for the game to do that for you, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's kind of a built-in way to do that throughout the game, to have the threat level increase, or the challenge rating of the game, I guess.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on it?
This reminds me of the second half of Pompeii, Downfall of Pompeii. And that's not cooperative. You were just talking about cooperative, this tension going up in a cooperative thing. But this being competitive, you know, the first half of Pompeii, you're trying to build up your population in the city. Second half is when Vesuvius erupts. And once you pass that point, once the volcano starts to erupt, Your turn switches into, instead of increasing your population, you're trying to get your people out of the city through the city gates, right?
Right.
And after you move guys, and then you have to draw a random lava tile out of the bag and place that on the board somewhere. And so as that section of the game progresses, lava is spreading throughout the city, and it's cutting off roots, and it's killing people. And so at the beginning, your options and your plans for how you want to get your people out could be very, very clear to you. You have a whole lot of options, you know, so I could go this way, you know, this is how I'm going to strategize this. But then all of a sudden somebody else might put a lava tile in your way, and you got holy crap, I'm totally cut off. Now I have to send my guys all the way over to the other side of the city, and that changes all my plans. And so it does that same thing. It ramps up tension, because at the end of everyone's turn, another lava tile gets put out there. By the time it gets back around to you, if you're playing a 4-player game, your options have really, really shrunk really fast. And so it, like the, with the same idea that you don't know exactly what's going to happen, where that lava is going to come out. And so you kind of get nervous about, what am I going to do? How is this going to affect me?
Right.
So builds that, up the tension.
Kind of that building tension, building threat level.
Yeah.
That's a good example. Mm-hmm.
I still need, we've only ever played Pompeii with 2 players. I really want to play a 4-player version of that sometime.
Yeah, we got to try that sometime.
Yeah.
The problem is we have like a whole list of games we need to try.
Well, I know, it's tough, isn't it?
And it's
so tough.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
So I was trying to think off the top of my head of other games that maybe share this same mechanic where things are getting threat level is increasing.
Well, some of the villains in Sentinels of the Multiverse kind of have that idea to them.
Sure do.
If you get in a certain number of a certain type of the villain cards in his discard, then he switches over and takes on new powers. Or if you get a certain number of the villain's minions out there in battle, then suddenly the villain is stronger, can't be harmed, that kind of stuff. So that kind of can ramp up some tension that way too. What else?
But all these ways that we're talking about, I guess... They all seem to blend pretty seamlessly with the game, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, you want it always to blend,
obviously,
right?
You want it to. I was trying to think if I could think of any games where it was like a glaring exception, like, I see. That's just terrible.
That didn't work at all.
You know, I mean, another game that's, I hate to mention this game, but Monopoly is actually a pretty good game for that, you know, that the tension increasing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, throughout the game, as people get more things out there, the stakes are kind of raised. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The stakes get raised and you know, fortunes are made and bankruptcies are declared.
Yeah, that's true. That's what Monopoly is all about. I don't know if that really quite is the same, though, because that can happen in Monopoly so fast. So fast. And that's kind of the that's the whole point of the game, is to get all those properties and get the other guy. I thought you were kind of talking more about some kind of external force on the players, you know?
Yeah, I guess I was. Okay, fair enough. But when you're talking about the Pompeii game, I mean, mm-hmm. that isn't that, right? Because, I mean, that's players doing that to one another. But you're saying they're being forced to play the lava tiles. It's not like they're choosing to play a lava tile,
yeah,
right? They're not like, I could make a move or I could screw you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to place a lava tile, correct?
Right, okay, right.
So I guess that,
yeah,
that's a fair point.
And they're limited on where they can place that lava tile, too. Because you can't just put it wherever you want. You have to put it next to an existing lava tile. And then there are certain, you know, there are four different places from which the lava can originate. And based on an icon on that tile, you're limited to putting it attached to one of those four lava flows. So you're limited on where you can put that tile. So, you know, it's kind of the idea.
Yeah. I get it. That makes more sense. That's a little more on topic.
Mm-hmm.
So good job with that. Way to be on topic.
I win.
So, you know, we've sometimes we like to try and think of an idea mm-hmm. based around a mechanic.
We like to do that. Yes.
You know, this one is pretty easy, right? I mean, we've a lot of times we've talked about the disarming the bomb game or the cracking the safe game. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Inherently, a game like that works very well for a mechanic like this. I mean, that's kind of the point, is
yeah.
that, you know, the tensions rise.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're counting down until the bomb goes off.
I think of a game like Catchphrase. You played Catchphrase before?
Of course.
Like yeah. the hot potato version of Catchphrase?
Yeah.
That, where the, it'll beep, right? The one yeah. I have beeps, right?
Yeah.
Beep.
It's the best beep, kind of catchphrase.
Beep. Beep. And then, you know, it starts to pick up yeah. the pace until it's like, and then whoever has it loses.
Right.
There's an outside force that's doing now. See, that's interesting because that's on a timer, right?
Yeah.
It's not random.
Right.
It will happen.
Right.
The same amount of time every time. of course, the issue with a game like that is then you get the players, like, they're waiting. It's like, beep, 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 beep. And they're like, oh, let me hand it to you. Oh, sorry. It took too long. Oh, now you.
Those guys are jerks.
Yeah.
I don't play with those kind of people.
I've played with several of those people.
No, that's not okay. They can leave the party. I will not sing karaoke for them.
I hope you don't sing karaoke for them.
Call back.
Next time I have to make you give you a game pitch, it's going to be Karaoke Master.
Anyway. What other forces, external forces, could we try and kind of feature in a game?
You know, let's... I just thought of this, and maybe this is not a good example of what you're thinking of, but let's talk about a scene from a movie, kind of in okay. honor of the Princess Bride. It's not from the Princess Bride.
Okay.
It's from Indiana Jones.
Okay.
Right? Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
The bridge.
The bridge, okay.
He's on the bridge, right? Yep. Now, this isn't exactly what happens to the movie, but he's on the bridge. He cuts the bridge, right?
Yeah.
But what if you're on the bridge and the external forces are slowly cutting the bridge, right? So you're a guy, you're trying to get across the bridge.
Okay.
And you need to get as many things across the bridge as you can before it collapses.
Okay.
Into the chasm below.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So throughout the game, the you know, pieces are coming off the bridge and the ropes are getting looser and looser and
okay.
fraying.
Yeah.
So at that point it's kind of like press your luck game, I guess. We're trying to decide.
What if rather than crossing the bridge in Temple of Doom, what if you're trying to outrun the boulder from Raiders? What if you're in the ancient temple and you're trying to gather artifacts as you go into the deeper and deeper into the ancient tomb, and then as soon as somebody gets the idol at the end of the thing, then as soon as they pick that up, it triggers the boulder and the boulder starts to chase them out, and they've got to run away from the boulder.
And maybe you've got some system to where the boulder picks up speed.
Yeah.
Or you, so that, you know, you never know quite how fast.
Right.
Because otherwise you're just talking about mm-hmm. the changeover point like in Pompeii.
Right. Or you rather than maybe the boulder doesn't pick up speed, the boulder goes at a constant speed. And what you're trying to do, you're trying to play cards to knock things over to get in the boulder's way to slow it down. Because if you don't slow it down, it's going to kill all of you.
Okay, fair enough. You know? Yeah, yeah.
But you're throwing down cards that will say, I'm knocked over a statue, and the boulder hits a statue, and it delays, or it moves back one space, or something like that.
Okay, okay.
You know? And so the goal is to get out alive, first of all, because if the boulder smashes you, you're dead and you lose. So that's number one, is to get out. Number two, to get out with the most treasures. And you want to get the idol at the end, because you're going to get a bunch of bonus points for that, but that also means you're going to have the hardest time getting away from the boulder.
And maybe when you're running, you can ditch pieces of treasure to try and slow it down there as you go. Well. So there's kind of your right. risk
or
reward on that,
you
right?
Can, you can drop pieces of treasure to get a speed boost, because the more stuff you're not carrying, yep. the faster you can run.
Good point. That's even better.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
Here's the moral of the story here. Game Salute, if you can get a hold of this license, yeah. Rob and I have got all sorts of mini games for you.
Oh, man. Indiana Jones, we got it. We're on it.
We're going to have the Rip Your Heart Out game, where you just tear your beating heart out.
Kalima!
So there'll be that. There'll be the fighting in the tank.
Uh-huh,
from Indiana yep. Jones 3.
How about, can we have the No Time for Love Dr. Jones car chase?
Yes. Yes. Of course.
Yes.
Most definitely.
That will be my favorite game.
So.
No Time for Love Dr. Jones.
Oh, there'll be so many great things in that movie. Uh-huh. I'm into
in
it.
In that series. In that saga.
Saga.
We can forget yes. Crystal Skull.
Game Salute, if you're going to buy that, leave out Crystal Skull. Please.
We can, although it might be fun to do Swinging Through the Trees with the Monkey Army. And just make it awful, because that part of the movie is awful.
That part of the movie is awful.
Real awful.
Real awful.
Yeah, so... Yeah, you know what? There's a game there. It doesn't have to be Indiana Jones, but it's okay to trade on that idea. People are familiar with that idea. You don't have to call it Indiana Jones to be fun, you know?
Call it Montana
Smith?
Smith.
No. That's and the... too close.
You said Smith.
Montana. Yeah, okay.
Ohio Dave.
It's sold. Printing money right there.
Printing money. Hey, speaking of printing money, yeah. You've got a game pitch that I'm sure is going to be just like printing money.
Oh, just like you know, left and right, pal.
So,
it's great.
So let me set this up a little
Please
bit.
Please do.
So,
yeah.
So we were doing a new thing on the show where Rob and I, to try and kind of flex our game designer muscles, mm-hmm. And to keep new fun ideas coming in and just challenge ourselves, we thought it would be cool to give each other a challenge. So this yeah. week, Rob is going to be pitching a game that I came up with. I gave him a title and two mechanics. The title is Hibachi Master. And the mechanics are worker placement and area control. And so now, right. Rob is going to pitch an amazing game called Hibachi Master about those things. I am really excited about it. This is probably going to be your best game pitch ever.
Guaranteed. Yeah. Hands down. It's a winner. It's pure gold. all right. I struggled with this a lot. Let me tell you a lot.
Good.
A lot. That was hard. And you know that I like simple things. I like simplicity. We haven't talked about this at all. It's important for listeners
right, yes,
to know.
Yes. No, this was our rule.
Right.
If we're going to do it, we really don't want to talk to each other about it because right. we want it to be fresh. You know, we don't right. want to give any input. Right. Our input was given. It was the right. title and two mechanics.
Right. And I've probably had three half complete designs on this so far and ditched them all. And and the one I'm going to pitch tonight is what finally came together for me just last night, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've struggled with this a lot. Hibachi Master featuring area control and worker placement. Okay, so the first thought that I had is I'm thinking area control. Well, we must be competing chefs trying to make food on the same hibachi grill, you know, big rectangular hibachi grill. And area control, that was my first thought was. That seemed too easy. Plus, I had no idea how to put worker placement into this. And I fought with that for a while, and I fought with some other ideas. Anyway, what I finally settled on is that the players are each restaurant owners, and they've all opened a Japanese steakhouse in a small town in Midwest America. Let's call it Kalamazoo, Michigan, because that's where we are.
Wow. Who thought that was a good idea?
Lots of people around there, because we've had some hibachi, stir grill places around here fail.
Several,
like, yeah,
four or more,
right? So each player is the owner of a new restaurant that they're trying to launch. Okay, in the four corners of the city. So the game board is actually a map of this city set up like a grid. Okay, and it's literally a square grid, and I don't know, it might be 10 by 10 or might be 10 by 15 or 15 by 20. I don't know exactly the size of the grid here, to be determined. And each player starts in one of the four corners. All right. So if you have four players, you got in all four corners. If you're two players, you're in opposite corners. All right. And then there in various places around the city, there are stores where you can buy ingredients. Okay. You need to buy different kinds of ingredients, in order to make food. All right. So I'm going to start by talking about components. Okay. You are going to have tokens that represent meat, meaning beef and poultry. Okay. Separate tokens for fish, because seafood is a big part of that style of food. So I want to have that separate. Okay. Noodles, because sometimes you want noodles, and vegetables.
Cool.
Okay. So four different kinds of resources, but you're also going to need staff to run your restaurant. You need a head chef for your restaurant, and then you're going to need recipes. So the staff and the chef are represented by D6s. Okay. Right now I'm thinking that the staff are black dice and the chef is a white die. And everybody gets one chef. Starts the game with one chef and one staff. One waiter or restaurant or kitchen staff, whatever you want to call them, staff. The staff dice are six-sided dice, but they're only numbered 1 to 3. So they're custom dice.
Okay.
So they have two number ones, two number twos, two number threes on them. The chef, though, is numbered 1 to 6.
Cool.
Okay. Then there are also recipe cards, a deck of cards. And I'm thinking actually it would be two decks of recipe cards. There would be the kind of the simple recipes and the complex recipes. Okay. And then everybody gets two chopsticks that are the same color. So I would have two red chopsticks. You would have two blue chopsticks. Somebody else had two green chopsticks. Somebody else would have two yellow chopsticks. Okay. All right. And this, explaining how the chopsticks work is going to be difficult to do with audio, because it'd be so much easier just to put them on a piece of paper and show you how it works, but I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
So, but I'm not there yet. Okay. So start of the game, you have, you're also going to have a bunch of coins. Tokens represent money. Okay. So you start the game, you have one staff member, you have one chef in your restaurant. You start the game by rolling those two dice. And then you can place those workers in any of the retail locations around the board, okay? So you can buy meat at the butcher shop. You can buy noodles at the noodle shop. I don't know what to call it. You can buy fish at the fish market, and you can buy vegetables at the farmer's market, okay?
Cool.
There's also a supermarket in the exact center of the board where you can go there to buy anything, but you don't know what you're going to get when you buy it.
Nice.
Okay. Supermarket, you kind of get whatever you get. Each store location can only support two workers at a time. So if I put two of my guys at the butcher shop, you can't get any meat on that turn unless you go to the supermarket and hope for the best. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever you roll, you're going to roll your dice first. And when you then, with that number, you put that worker on that location, you get that number of that type of resource. So if I roll a 3 on my staff die and I put that in the butcher shop, I'm going to get 3 pieces of meat.
Cool.
Okay. Okay. Trying to make sure I'm staying organized in my brain here. Okay. So everybody places their workers, you collect your resources and you're good. Now, okay. The other thing you can do is on your starting square is your restaurant location. So if you put a guy in your restaurant, you can put as many of your guys in your own restaurant as you want. But only your chef can draw a recipe card. So in order to get a recipe card, you have to devote your chef to that in your kitchen. He has to develop a new recipe, right?
Okay.
Okay. So you draw a recipe card from the top of the deck. And you can have as many of those as you want at any given time. Doesn't matter. Okay. So you've got your recipe card. You've taken some turns. You've collected ingredients. Now you want to make that recipe, okay, to try and attract some business to your store. You need to put all of your staff Well, let's see. You don't have to put all your staff. Maybe you're better off putting all your staff in your kitchen. But it's in order to make a recipe, you at least have to put your chef in your kitchen.
Okay.
Then in order to make the recipe, you need the recipe card will tell you a certain number of ingredients that you need, a certain number of tokens of each resource type on there, and it will give you a target number. Okay. So let's say I want to make we want to make some ramen noodles. All right. So I want some noodles and some vegetables, and that's all I need. And that has a target number of 4. All right. My chef die goes from 1 to 6.
So he can do it on his own half the time.
Half the time. Right. So I'm going to roll my chef die. Let's say I get a 4. I meet that goal. Success. I succeed at making that recipe. I spend those resources. Those resources are gone. They go back to the pools. And by making a successful recipe, I get 2 coins. That means I made food. People came in and bought food for me. Great. I made some money. All right. But let's say I had rolled a 6 instead of rolling a 4. I would get two coins for successfully creating that food. And I would also get 1 extra coin for every point above that.
So you get 4.
I would get 4 coins. If I had put my chef and my staff member in the kitchen at the same time, and let's say I had rolled a 6 on my chef and a 3 on my staff member, I'd get 2 points for that. Plus, I'd be, what is that? Is that 5 over? So I get 5 more coins on top of that. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay. Oh, and I forgot. The other thing you can do is you can send your chef to the temp agency to hire more staff.
Oh,
okay. And it's going to cost you 1 coin every time you hire a staff member.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So I'm making money. I'm making money. What do I spend money on? I spend money on advertising, to advertise my restaurant, to get more interest from the community, get more customers, to control more area of the city, to try and dominate over my competitors.
All right.
This is where the chopsticks and the grid come in. Okay. You start out with controlling a 2x2 section of the board. Your restaurant is the main corner, the first corner, and then every square adjacent to that. So 4 squares, a 2x2 section, right? Okay. What you're doing, in order to define that area, you are placing your chopsticks on the borders of that.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, your chopsticks are laid down at a right angle.
Yep.
Okay. With the two ends coming together at the corner. And you're only ever making acute angles here. Does that make sense? Acute angles? Yeah. Okay. Never going to make an obtuse angle.
Right.
All right. If I want to expand my territory, I need to spend 2 coins per square I'm going to expand into. Okay. But I can't just buy 1 square at a time because my chopsticks aren't going to bend that way.
Right.
Right. So if I want to expand my influence, basically by moving one of those chopsticks over 1 row, so that instead of being a 2x2 square, it would turn into a 2x3 rectangle.
Yep.
Okay. I need to buy 2 squares to do that. 2 coins per square. 2 squares is going to cost me 4 coins. Okay. So I can expand that way. That's it. I've got my money. I can make that purchase at the end of my turn. I'm good. Next time it comes around and I'm ready to expand again, I have a choice. Let's say I just expanded eastward on the board. Okay. If I want to expand eastward again, I can just buy the next 2 squares over to that side. It's going to cost me 4 more coins.
Okay.
All right. But the other option I had was to expand north.
Sure.
Okay. If I want to expand north, now the northerly direction of my territory is actually 3 squares wide. So in order to expand northward, I'm going to have to buy 3 squares, not just 2.
Okay.
Is this making sense?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So in order to buy 3 squares, I'm going to have to spend 6 coins. Okay. So as I'm making more recipes and attracting more business and earning more money, I'm going to have to spend more and more money to reach a wider section of the city. And this is the idea. So this is the area control. The game ends when somebody controls 50% or more of the city.
Okay. Okay. 2 questions. One, what does what benefit do I get from controlling more?
Okay. Good question. If I can get some of those stores within my territory, okay, so I can expand to a point where I can take over the meat market. I have my influence over the meat market. I'm going to be able to get twice as many resources.
Cool. Okay.
And this is what I'm not sure. Either I'm going to get twice as many resources when I go there, or my opponents are going to get half as many. And I don't know which way to balance that, but that's just the idea. I would rather it be twice as many than cut back on somebody else.
Yeah, because I mean that giving you more, you might not be able to do stuff with all the things you have.
Yeah.
But giving them less is always really difficult. Going to screw them.
Right.
So
yeah, the one exception, of course, would be the supermarket. You can never have influence over the supermarket because they're bigger. They're not a local shop. They're a nationwide chain, you know, so they're not going to be influenced by a local business.
And they're directly in the center of the board. So right. Exactly. Not as big of an issue. Second question, what happens when my chopstick runs into your chopstick? Doesn't matter, we just cross?
No, this is even better, okay? If you are going to bump into somebody else's chopstick, okay, and you want to encroach on their territory, you have to buy out their squares, and it's going to cost you double.
Okay.
So for every square that you own that I want to buy, I don't pay two for it, I have to pay four for it, because I'm fighting against your marketing.
And so I'm pushing you back.
Right.
Okay, so right. Basically I'm paying two to move and then two to move you. In the opposite direction.
Exactly.
Cool. Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, let's say you have an edge here that's four squares wide, and I'm pushing up against it only two squares wide. Obviously, again, I can't cut into your territory because the chopsticks don't go that way. So in order for me to encroach on that, I have to buy that entire row of your influence just to get two.
Wow.
To push your chopsticks out of the way. So that's the idea.
Wow.
That's kind of the idea. So worker placement, you're getting people to work in your kitchen to go get you ingredients to make better food. Of course, at some point, you're going to be able to, based on how much staff you have, I think, or how much money you have, you can start developing recipes from the more expensive deck to earn more money from it, right? But yeah, so you're getting staff, you're putting them, sending out into the city to get ingredients, bringing it back, making the best food you can to earn money from your customers, to advertise your business, to take over the city for and become the hibachi master.
That's pretty cool. You put more thought into this than I actually thought you would.
Okay.
I'm impressed.
Well, like I said, I struggled with it for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, you came up with like a really complex pitch. I'm very impressed. And it's interesting that it gave you so much trouble. I actually was nervous that it, I mean, I wanted it to, I mean, I wasn't trying to be a jerk, but I wanted it to be tough. Like, mm-hmm. The idea was that it would be something that you weren't necessarily mm-hmm. comfortable with trying to
do. This is completely unlike anything I would have pitched normally.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other comments, thoughts? What do you think?
There was a die for the workers and for the chef.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, I thought you said there was one for the owner.
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
Okay. I just misheard that then. That's cool. That was okay. Just a question I had. No, I you know, obviously for the chopsticks thing, I would love to see it on paper.
Yeah, yeah. It's
to kind of get how it's moving.
And I'm hoping it's difficult to do just talking about it. It'd be so much easier just to show you. And when I do the write-up for the website, maybe I'll make some quick mock-ups or something.
That would be
for
cool.
People to look
that way
at.
The listeners can look at it and say, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, I'm all commented out. I like it. I think it's it actually sounds like fun. I would try that game.
Yeah, I think I would too. And it's resource heavy. I mean, there's a lot of pieces in there. There's dice. There's all the different kinds of things. There's coins. There's chopsticks. There's cards. There's a big board with a map of the city on it. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot to do. A lot to put together for that. And I normally don't think in that direction usually.
But you did.
But to meet your demands, I had to.
Awesome. Honestly, if I had to guess ahead of time what you were going to pitch,
uh-huh.
I thought you would pitch guys working on a hibachi.
Yeah.
The workers was the food.
Okay.
And the area control was controlling more space on the hibachi. I actually thought you'd pitch a game like that, just because that's a little more up your alley. It's it's a little more streamlined.
Well, and like I said, that's kind of what I started thinking.
Which I thought was
originally.
Funny when you said, well, at first I was thinking, I thought, that's kind of what I thought you'd pitch. So,
cool.
Glad to see you went out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the point.
Right.
That was kind of the point. So it was fun. I enjoyed doing that, and I want to keep doing this in the future. I think this is a good thought experiment, a good challenge for us.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So... on that note.
Yeah. On that note, I have to challenge you now.
You do.
Yeah. And I actually think this could be fun.
Okay.
The
I'm scared.
The title I want to give you is A Roll in the Hay.
Okay.
Okay. So the game is called A Roll in the Hay. It features roll selection.
Okay.
Okay. And a sand timer.
Oh, a sand timer.
Yeah.
That's mean. All right. Yeah. So, all right. It's called The Roll in the Hay. A roll in the hay. And roll, R-O-L-L.
You can spell roll however you want in the title.
Okay. Okay. And roll selection.
Uh-huh.
So the idea that throughout the game, you can choose to be different people or objects or something.
Something.
Animals, yep. Whatever.
Participants. In the activity. Yes.
Oh, gosh.
And a sand timer. And then
sand timer. Everybody knows what a sand timer is, so. Yep. Okay.
And, you know, whatever length. I don't know if you want to do 30 seconds, a minute and a half, you know, whatever's realistic
it
for that.
It will depend on what I figure out how to use it for.
Yeah. So,
but I will research to make sure they make one of the size that I require.
Sure. Okay. So there you go. That's your challenge.
All right. I'll do what I can with that.
Okay.
Next week we'll be back. It'll be great.
Cool. Let's wrap up with some Twitter questions here. What do you say?
I say that's a great idea.
Actually, we have a plethora of comments from a friend of the show, Brian LaBurge.
Plethora, you mean? Two.
Well, yeah. A Twitter comment and actually a comment on the website. Let's see. The first thing he tweeted at us, he said, do you see any advantages to random number generation using something other than dice? Cards spring to mind, as you can use the same card for multiple things. Curious what you can come up with.
I'll start with that. Yes. Yes. Cards are great. When we play Settlers of Catan, we have the dice deck.
Oh, yeah.
So basically what that does is it's the cards. They mm-hmm. have a number on them, just like the dice do. Two things that stand out about that. A, they're incredibly balanced because
yeah.
that deck of cards represents balanced numbers coming up. The sevens will come up the most. The twos will come up the least, but they'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, they also have things that happen on those cards. People sometimes get free resources and such. So I think... So cards are good because they make it, you know what I mean? They make it statistically a little better. And second, and then I think this is even more important to me, they allow for a lot more diversity than a die does.
Sure.
What are your thoughts?
A spinner. You know?
Which allows for more diversity than a die in theory.
Sure. You know? Gosh, wonder what else. Other random ideas.
You know, they used to do back in the day, before they had dice, you would actually reach into a bag and pull out these things.
Sure. You could have tokens in a bag, you know, in an opaque bag. Sure.
Yeah. Which might be kind of fun. I mean, a kind of throwback. I mean, pricing wise, that might be a little less cost effective than a deck of cards, say, having a bag with tokens in it, but I kind of like that. It's kind of cool.
It could be a fun thing to explore, yeah. Yeah, you'd have a bunch of things of one color and just a few of a separate color, or even just numbers printed on tokens. Yeah, that's a lottery idea. You know, ping pong balls in the thing.
I want to make a game that includes the ping pong ball cage. You
roll. the bingo cage, yeah. You roll the thing, yeah. B12.
The mechanic of the week. Bingo.
Bingo. well, I guess you couldn't really do a slot machine, could you? Not really. I mean, a slot machine introduces randomness, but it's those kind of tumblers. But that's kind of a game in itself. Yeah. Cards is probably one of the best options for
I think cards better than dice.
Potentially.
Depending on what you're trying to do.
Potentially on how you use it. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I might as well read a comment from the website here as well.
Sure.
Okay. Brian also says he was commenting in relation to our bonus episode where we recorded our playtest of my game Splitters, which, by the way, I have the version 0.3 ready to go.
Oh.
So I would like to try that again with you sometime.
Yeah.
He says on the naming of points, because part of that game, when you're scoring points, you're getting hard points and soft points, and
right.
soft points you can gain and lose, but hard points, once you get them, then you get them. So he says, what you really have here is a banking system. Soft points are just points. Hard points are points that are protected. The most common term that comes to mind for protecting a point is to bank it. And he's right. And I had commented that I kind of like the term hard point, but I don't really like the term soft point. And I kind of want to just come up some different nomenclature for that.
Right.
And he goes on to say, now what the final term is depends on how the theme is presented there. I think you could keep the term points, but you might also refer to points as code, gears, or cogs. Banking them would then be something like hard-coding them or compiling them. Those are excellent points. I don't want to call it banking because it's
right.
Because that implies a different thing, but he's absolutely right that there's all kinds of different language that I could put around that, and if I refer to it in that kind of context, I think that would be that's great. That's a great way to come at it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Very good points. Thank you, sir, for
thank you, Brian,
sending those out. And I think you have a plug you'd like to throw out here.
I do also have a plug. Look at me. I got everything today.
You do?
Yeah.
I'm just hanging out.
Loser. This is a plug for a Kickstarter that I just came across today, as a matter of fact. It's called Doppelganger, the Universal Game Piece. And it's kind of a cool thing. It's a little 1-inch wide LCD screen. It looks like it's about 1 inch by 1.5 inches. And it's double sided. So, you know, there's, I guess it's 2 screens, 1 on each side of the piece. It's set on, or it's made on a basic 1-inch wide game piece base. So it would work kind of with any mini setup.
Cool.
And what you do is you plug it into your computer and you can upload your own photo onto that little screen.
Oh.
And so that game piece can basically have a picture of whatever you want it to be. So it can be your character on there. If you're running a game of D&D and you don't have that specific nasty wizard guy, or you just want him simply to stand out from all the other minis on the board, you can put an evil picture on there. I guess it also works as like a hit point counter. So if you're playing a game of Magic, rather than putting your D20 down there, you can just put the counter feature on and set it on 20. Every time you lose a hit point, you push the button and it counts down for you. It's very cool.
It's really neat looking too. I'm looking at the picture right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool looking. So yeah. They've got quite a ways to go, but they're really early in the process.
Yeah, it's very early. I think by the time this show posts, they'll be about halfway through the campaign is what it looks like. You're right. They have a long way to go, but it's a cool, cool thing.
Yeah, and I think once this catches on, it'll
yeah, it could be. It could be very cool. The base price that they're looking at right now looks like $25 for one piece, which is a little pricey. But if they can get their numbers up and get their production up, I mean, they could easily get those things down to, I would say, $10 a piece.
And if you're a player, it's not that pricey. If you're a DM or GM and you're looking to run a game and you want like 5 or 6 of them, yeah,
well,
a little
different.
Pricier. But,
yeah, but
if you're just a player, especially if you're going to a con game, what a great, you're like, oh, here's my character, what's up?
Super cool. And it's a cute little video they have on there, Doppelganger, the Universal Game Piece by Rodney Benesh, or Benesh, I'm not sure I pronounced that. It's a cool thing. So best of luck to those guys. Check it out if you play a lot of games with minis. I think you really dig that. It's a fun thing. It's a fun idea. And if I was playing more D&D right now, I would probably back it right now. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think that's all we got.
I think so.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. You can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email, please. We will read it on the show. I promise, promise, promise. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JA Slingerland, and I am at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you like. You can keep on coming back and listening to us every week. And stay tuned, because we got all kinds of fun stuff coming up in the future. We're going to have a good old time. And we totally forgot to talk about Gen Con, which also happened just recently. Gen Con, but registration, all that stuff.
Oh.
That's just more to talk about next time, guys.
That is.
Oh, boy, what a jam-packed show. We're really packing it in for you, kids. Next time, though.
Next week, we'll attempt to remember to talk about Gen Con.
Yeah, we have to.
Good plan.
Because we have some stuff to say about that. All right. Good night, one and all. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. Second half is when Vesuvius erupts. And
we're just doing stellar.
It's terrible, isn't it?